The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here are David Littlejohn and Katie Shook with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right. It is that time.
Wait, I have an idea. I'm just going to randomly babble for 5 minutes. And then you're going to interject as if I can't hear you. Oh, wait, that was last week.
let's try it for fun and adventure. No, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the True Wealth program. In studio this week, I'm happy to be back. I'm your host, David Littlejohn. Joining me as always, or almost always.
Or covering for you when you're not here, is Katie Shook. I was like a deer in a headlights because he's like, keep talking. And I'm like, I can't hear anything. And you're... Like, your feed was live.
The audience could hear, but you could not.
But I couldn't hear. It was like...
Yeah, it was one of those moments of like, and then we made history the wrong way.
Well, and it's one thing if you're like, well, I don't have anybody to talk to, no problem. Like, you're mentally kind of prepared for that. And it's another thing when you're like, oh, they're going to call in. It's like you're mentally prepared for that. But there was this like weird crossover that was just no man's land to me. And and he's like, keep talking. And I'm like, I don't know what to talk about. I was hoping David would be here by now.
Well, and here's the fun thing. Fun
Shows were a live our, podcast or a
fun
live
fact
thing.
For our audience to enjoy is that we talk about concepts that we want to cover, but we don't script the show because otherwise I know how fun it is to listen to people just read a lecture on air.
Gross.
We'd probably be off air if that was our strategy. So we want it to be a lot more natural and organic. We still want to figure out ways to add value. If you're just joining, if you ever listened to the program before, you know, welcome. This is the learning show, right? So just to give a little backdrop, right? So Dave Littlejohn here. I'm a 20-year veteran of the financial industry and have been...
10-year veteran of Littlejohn Financial Services.
We're literally coming up on the formal 10-year anniversary. This is the 10-year year, but I've been doing this for over 20 years
That's
now.
That's so crazy.
As a pro and have been... I've been a broker, no longer a broker, now work in the advisory world, still a professional advisor. We have and serve clients both locally and around the country. We're licensed in multiple states and have clients in almost every time zone in the country. I don't think we have anybody in Hawaii.
I was going to say, Hawaii is the only one that
I think Hawaii
think.
And we actually have some clients that I think they're legally from Alaska, but they live out of country. So
correct.
Some expats.
Yep.
But... And, you know, that's as much as I can tell you because we don't kiss and tell about our clients.
Confidentiality, yeah.
Yep.
There's those things.
But the purpose of this program is really education and entertainment.
Right.
Right. And so we cover lots of different topics. Always encourage folks, if you end up with a question and you would like us to tackle it on air, we're happy to do so. You can send an email to us at info@littlejohnfs and we'll actually... answer it if it's appropriate.
And I
well, caveat.
How about if it's on topic too, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, because sometimes people ask questions and we're like, well, that would be a great show next week or something.
Or it would be a great show for like, you know, Mike Winters or something. Where it's like, so I don't really know how to seed your lawn. That's not my expertise here. So you can ask me that question and I'll be like, you know what I would do is
I can tell you how to bury money in your lawn, but I don't know that that's really productive either. Mm. I will say though, also, if you have questions, and you want to get through, you can always call our office, 541-375-0898. And Heather will answer. And we have an instant messenger that goes throughout our whole entire office in multiple locations. So she can always shoot us a message and we can try to get it answered on air too as well.
Yeah, we used to try to take live calls and we just have sort of...
Well, we can't. It's harder to do with this station when it moved.
Right. We should,
the logistics
we should,
are just
we
harder.
Should squeeze on that more. We should take live calls, right? Because I'm sure some of you out there listening are like, I'd call. So anyway, today I want to talk about a couple things. So we're going to keep some of this high level, and I want to cover things that I think are interesting in a landscape that is post-election, right? We think.
Can we even call it that?
We think, right? And that's because...
Post-vote day?
Yeah.
It's not really post-election yet.
It's interesting. Normally you would say, because one party has not conceded, right? So that means that since nobody's formally said, you know, the media has said, by and large, like, no, we're going to call it. Like the AP said, we're going to call the election. But it's not formal. So right. It is post-election, but it doesn't mean it's post-results.
Right.
It certainly appears to be a result one way. But right. I suppose, you know, until it's officially stamped, that's the gotcha of like, I'm not going to call it. Just so you know, because I'm not about to create some I told you so weirdo moment. Nope. I'm just like punt on that one. But we are looking at what appears to be regime change. And so what does that mean? And we're going to highlight some of the considerations because so far there was another Miracle Monday that happened that sort of changed the landscape for our economy. And here's the weird thing, not related to the election.
What do you mean when you say miracle? I have like five questions lined up already.
Oh, good.
What do you mean when you say Miracle Monday? Well, what does that mean? Like the markets went up?
Oh, big, right? Big market move on
across
Monday.
The board or a certain sector?
Mostly across the board. I mean, there was big tech struggled. The areas of the economy that have done the very best all year struggled. But the areas that have been doing terrible
came up. So they
all
said, hi.
Big rise. Like,
they
like
showed up to the party, but super late.
Up and went up like 8 to 15% yesterday.
So
energy
now
stocks, 8 to 15%.
Really?
Yesterday. Yep.
In one day?
One day.
Wow. Sorry. I have a really fun sneeze coming on. And, you know,
oh,
like
it's going to be. Do I need to like hit the mute button for
no,
you?
No. Isn't there a weird thing that you can say and then it goes away or something? Okay. So you talked about Monday. We talked
so
about
Miracle Monday. And it's because vaccine announcement.
Is that what it was that kind of pushed it off?
Pfizer announced a
COVID vaccine.
A COVID vaccine that they said so far,
like 95% or something.
They said about 90% effective, and they've got 2 months of human trials, and it's a pretty good size sample here. And so it appears that we have a genuine vaccine on the horizon, which has been, for many people, that's been the drumbeat is, well, this thing doesn't end until we get a vaccine. I'm not going to touch any other theories than that on air.
Yeah, because it's too controversial.
It just gets everybody's hackles up because it's like, well, there's this other thing, or though there's not, it's this other. And I'm like, doggone it, people. Just, you know, why can't we have a discussion and learn with each other instead of having to be right all the time?
Good point.
And I say that knowing full well I'm pretty guilty, and I'm the one with the microphone and the bully pulpit right now. I get it.
David does like his soapbox, by the way.
Yes. Could we make it just a little taller, please?
Oh, what color would you like it? I want to paint it this Christmas.
Indeed.
So. Oh, and it, no, but okay. Now have we ever, by the way, I'm admitting I did not pay attention as well as I should have in social studies when I was younger. Have we ever had a time in our history where the vote has been challenged like it is now?
Yes.
When was it?
Al Gore in 2000, Al Gore and George Bush. It actually took well into December before the vote was officially formalized.
Okay.
The media called it for George Bush, and then there were multiple recounts in the state of Florida. The margin was very thin. There was the hanging Chad.
Oh, that's right. Like the thing didn't get, poked all the way through or something.
Right. So there was a number of issues, but ultimately the court system kind of, and there's conspiracy amongst. There are people that still to this day believe it that the election was stolen. And so, but that was 20 years ago, right? But yeah, we've actually had it happen. And
I remember the Chad thing now that you say that.
To get it resolved. So this is not unprecedented. And again, the media had sort of made its call, right? And just said, no, it's going to be this. And then, but we'll see if it gets turned over in court. That is the very similar thing that's going on right now. So it is, well, the presumptive call has been made one way, but it's not official, right? I will say what I think most have said is, look, if they're legitimate votes, they got to be counted, right? I mean, that's the bottom line in that. Let the people speak. If your side loses in a legitimate vote off, then suck it up, Buttercup. That's how it goes in this country. But, you know, I think they should be legitimate votes.
Well, and we've consistently throughout history.
I mean, like, by the way, if you're listening and you find yourself, your blood pressure elevating because using the term legitimate vote bugs you, right? Then you need to check where you're at and, like, take your own pulse for where you're at on this thing, because you don't want, I mean, if the shoe were on the other foot, you certainly don't want illegitimate votes influencing things.
Right. Well, I guess my question is, like, I always think about all of the conveniences and everything we have throughout our day now that didn't exist 20 years ago, right? Like, you just mentioned the whole Chad thing. Like, I remember when everybody's like, oh, the Chads. Now, okay, so now we've gone to online voting. I know that, you know, Oregon's had mail-in ballots, or not online. I'm sorry, I retract that. Not online, but, like, mail-in ballots. Like, Oregon's had mail-in ballots for a long time, which was weird for me coming from California because I was used to, like, going to vote. And so I was like, oh, I get to mail it in. That's awesome.
It is convenient.
It is super convenient. And then, and I remember when I was called for jury duty and they said, you realize if you're like registered to vote and it doesn't match your driver's license, you're going to get called for jury duty twice because they think there's two of you that live at the address. And so during this whole process, I've been thinking, are there like weird communications in it? Like, I mean, not that you can answer that question. I'm just saying I'm, you know, when people say, oh, I got like three votes mailed to my house. I don't know. There's a lot. There's so much surrounding it. I kind of just want it settled. I just want to know the answer and move on.
Me too.
I mean, I you know, it's everybody. And if you look at history, I mean, it's been Democrats and it's been Republicans. Right. And we've changed regimes how many times now? I mean, it happens and it will continue to happen throughout our history. So, or like as we continue to make history. So, yeah, it's not like it's been, you know, Republican or Democrat for 100 years. And all of a sudden it's something different.
No. So anyway, let's put that one to bed and now talk about post whatever. What does it mean for investors? And there are so many questions that we need to unpack today. For example, I have people asking me about, you know, is the stock market going to crash? Well, it hasn't yet, right?
I feel like that is the Chicken Little, the sky is falling question.
It is. But so, or should we be doing something different? Okay, so I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I want to talk about what's going on and some of the things that we're observing because we did have an investment committee meeting this morning. But also, here's a fun one. Katie brought this up before the show, and we're going to cover this and more. How about real estate? Okay, some interesting things in the real estate market that we want to talk about as well. But as it turns out, we're at that point in the show where we have to take the evil corporate profit break, right? So we're going to take the evil corporate profit break.
Hey, we paid for that evil corporate profit break.
Shh, you're jinxing it. All right, and then we'll be right back. Stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Your host, Dave Littlejohn, in studio with
Katie Shook.
And reminder, if you guys are just joining us, check out the podcast. The good news is if you missed the last segment, it already happened. So you can listen to it later. But we are
moving
forward.
Thanks for that one, Captain Obvious.
We got this one. I got you. So we are going to be talking today about
things that are important to you.
Yeah, well, we're going to look forward. I think they're important to a lot of investors. We get a lot of questions, and so I'm going to try to hit on high-level topics today. Katie, I want to encourage you to ask questions as this happens as well, because I know our listeners have these questions, right?
Right.
But I'm going to start with a few biggies. And so we're making some assumptions today, right? The first segment of the show, the assumption is that the election results stand as they appear they will, and so we're going to move forward.
Okay.
And so if that is the case, what does it mean?
Yeah, what is on the horizon? Because there's some different tax policy coming up. And we, before we left to the break, we mentioned people have been asking, is the stock market going to crash? Which we haven't seen that. We had a bump in almost 12 to 15% on Monday.
Not the whole market.
Some sectors.
You know, the major indexes went up about 3%.
That's still a good move, though, right now.
It hit all-time highs.
Hey, guess what? Up is up.
Yes.
We're happy for up.
3% is very different than 12 to 15.
Right.
Individual stocks went up big. I mean, as an example, in the last 2 weeks, Uber, the rideshare company, is up about 40%.
Now, is Uber Conference the same as the Uber Drive?
No. No, different deal.
Really? They're just both named Uber?
Yeah, they're different.
They're not owned by the same company, though?
Nope.
Huh. Okay.
At least I don't think they are. Right. No.
Uber, I just thought that
Uber
was weird.
Ride sharing technology.
Right.
Okay? You know, for years it used to be Uber was kind of the term that meant like it was like the German version of super. So like the Uber car was not about a self-driving car or the service. It was like, oh, that's a cool sports car.
You kind of wonder sometimes how things like that translate in other countries when that has a funny meaning.
Mm-hmm. So anyhow, that was an individual stock that in the last 2 weeks was up like 40%. Okay, not a recommendation to purchase, just so we're clear.
Kind of random, though.
Proposition 22 passed in California.
Which is what?
It was so California passed a rule, and I don't remember what it was, but it was...
Oh, is this like the taxi thing where it's like they weren't...
No. This is about that gig economy means that like rideshare people had to be employees of Uber. So
right, they couldn't be independent people.
They're not independent contractors. They had to be considered employees.
Because then unionized.
They wanted to have payroll for them. They wanted to. But then you have to do things like hours and provide benefits and a bunch of other stuff. It was going to radically change the cost structure and function. So Uber and Lyft, the corresponding rival.
Yeah, Home Depot
and
Lowe's.
Basically stopped service in California. And then there was sort of a suspension of the rule while it got worked out so they could do a little bit. But the voters passed, I believe it was Proposition 22, that more or less exempted Uber and Lyft from that rule. And so the stock went bananas because, you know, California is a giant population lobe and lots of rideshare there. So, if you don't get 20% of the U.S. population or whatever it is, you know, it's 10 and 15% of the U.S. population's in California, right, then that really hurts corporate earnings. Especially because there's a lot of rural populations that there's not much Uber, right? Like, look around Roseburg, not so much. But, you know, and I don't know. We may even have local laws that forbid it still. But that's the idea.
I thought somebody said they're doing it now.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
So, anyway, I think for a while there were local laws in, like,
yeah, preventing it,
area
it,
you couldn't have it. So, what are we looking at? I'm going to make some observations, and I want to clarify again. Not investment advice. Okay. Don't go. You go do your own research. I'm not giving investment advice right now, but I'm going to show you some observations. As an example, one of the best performing asset classes in the S&P 500 index was technology. There's 11 primary indexes, 11 primary subcomponents, if you will, indices to the primary index of the S&P. So it breaks down into these subsectors. So technology is one of the subsectors, and it's grown to be a significant portion of the S&P 500. So
I'm assuming Amazon and Facebook have like a lot to do with that too.
Oh yeah, the top 10 stocks of the S&P 500 are like 30% of the allocation to the entire thing.
No way.
Yeah, there's 505 stocks, not 500 in the S&P, and the top 10 represent like 30% of the value, the total value of the index.
Right. So one of the things
and
that
most
people
most of them are tech.
So one of the things that people think about when they go, oh, the top 500 stocks, the built-in assumption, if you didn't know, would be that everybody gets 1/500th of the share. And that's not how it works, right? Like the bigger the company, like Amazon or Facebook, the bigger the piece
estate.
Of pie, right? So, I mean, like you got to realize the big hitters, like you said, the top 10 stocks are taking up a third of the pie.
Yeah, it's like it's called a cap-weighted index, right? So market capitalization. So the bigger the company, the bigger the piece of the pie. It's a good way to describe it.
I like pie. We're going on Thanksgiving. Pie.
So if we think about what that's telling us sort of underneath, that there was this big move in large tech, and it was also the quote-unquote stay-at-home companies that got to stay open. So Walmart, Home Depot, and Costco all stayed open during the pandemic. They were deemed essential. Right.
Right.
And we saw other companies that really barely had any activity, like Uber for a while. And then we've seen Amazon thrive, right? You know, online presence. Google still thriving.
Yeah, they were made for a pandemic.
How about Zoom, right? I mean, how Zoom calls. Oh, Zoom to infinity. My it just makes my head want to melt. But anyway, Zoom calls.
True. Zoom was like prepping for this. They're like, we love pandemics. Everybody's using our stuff now.
I'm like, if there's more than four people in a Zoom call, I just don't like it anymore. It's just too many. It's like the Brady Bunch went bananas.
It is totally like the Brady Bunch intro with everybody pieced on the windows.
Mm-hmm. So oh my God. Like, we're done here. Anyhow,
that's funny.
The idea, though, is that we had all of this money flowing into certain areas of the market. And then we had this announcement of potential vaccine. And now folks are saying, well, is the economy going to open back up? Are we going to start to see more people traveling on airlines again soon? Are we going to see people getting back on cruise ships?
That's kind of the million-dollar question, huh?
It is. And so it's very early, but the market essentially made a hard bet that, yeah, that's a good sign. And so we saw hospitality and travel and entertainment stocks spike yesterday significantly on the idea that the economy could reopen now because a vaccine means that we could potentially end lockdowns. Okay. Now, it's still...
It's really early. I mean...
There's still like 9-10 month pathway for...
Getting this actually out in the public.
And then there's distribution, right?
Right.
You have to manufacture at a certain rate to get these things out. And right now, they think they could manufacture about enough vaccine to treat 25 million people. They said 50 million doses, but it takes two doses. So that's about 25 million people. Well, last I checked, the population of the United States alone is over 300 million. And we're fighting for global vaccine here.
Oh, goodness.
So, yeah, do the math. We're going to have to really spool up manufacturing.
So again, what portion of our pie are we getting? So.
Well, and who's the most at risk and how do you do it? Now it's the lottery. And there are a lot of people that are going to ask, do you want a vaccine that was rushed to market?
True.
Fair question. So nevertheless,
so how does this
what is this thing that I am that we have noticed? And I say we because I have an investment committee. It's not just me. But what have we noticed about the markets? There were some underperforming areas, right? Sectors that did terrible, sectors like energy, real estate has by and large been in a challenge position. Utility companies up until the last month or so had really been in a challenge position. And this was because with COVID, presumably, utility bills weren't getting paid when we said, hey, we're going to have a holiday on payment.
I was going to ask about that. Yeah, because their actual income has just gone down. Not that their usage has. I mean, I'm assuming the usage might have gone up a little bit because if people are all... You know, if you have five people that work in an office and they're all home, working from home, then you have five houses that are now being lit all day versus one office that's being lit. So there's probably more energy usage, possibly.
Hard to say, but possibly.
But so, payments, yeah, people not paying their bills because they can't afford it.
That was it. So it changed the revenue stream, which changes the valuation for the company.
Aye.
And now those things are potentially going to change again, so folks are trying to figure that out. But here's what I have noticed. If you were to just look at the market and strip away what sector or category of the investment it is, and instead look at just the size of the market,
okay.
So small companies, medium companies, or big companies, and then there's something that we look at as advisors typically, as pros, value companies versus growth companies. Growth companies are the companies that typically are reinvesting back into themselves.
To make them grow bigger.
Yeah, so they're not typically paying dividends. They're usually reinvesting and getting bigger.
Which, for new listeners, what's a dividend?
Dividend is essentially a profit share. So if a company has profits after expenses, then they can distribute profits to the shareholders in the form of a dividend. So it's a profit distribution to shareholders.
Because it's either pay taxes to the IRS or give it back to the shareholders.
Well, actually, dividend.
Or a little bit of both.
The company pays taxes and then has to pay the dividend out, and then you get to pay taxes again. Dividends are double taxed.
Yikes.
So, yeah, it's one of the great frustrations of the financial industry and corporate America is that, you know, because there's an S corporation and a C corporation. C corporations are the publicly traded ones. And that type of corporation is its own standalone tax entity. So it pays its own taxes.
And then gives it to people and then people pay taxes.
And then the shareholders get to get their dividend distributions of profits and then taxes again. This is not the let's talk about taxes show today, but
nope.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
The corporate tax rate that is being talked about being raised by the Biden administration, it would be essentially a tax that businesses would pay. And it's not just big companies. It's pretty well businesses. All businesses would pay.
Which that can be a slippery slope.
Quite. You know, it certainly would catch ours. You know, we have a total of we have 6 employees, and one of our teammates is a contractor, but also sort of, you know, he's part of the team,
but he's a contractor.
He's a contractor, right? So right. He's not a W-2 employee. So team of 7, 6 employees, the classic definition of small business. We're definitely in there.
Oh, yeah. Under 10 people. Yeah.
Yeah. But our taxes will go up, right? If what is being proposed happens, you know, our tax will go up. So it's a given. Right at this point, like if the policy, like by definition, we're just in there, because if you have 6 people, the threshold is, you know, $400,000. $400,000 spread amongst 6 people, not that much money.
True.
Not when you start paying the business expenses and overhead and everything else. So he's got to math up on these things, right? But here's what I've noticed about the investment landscape: all that money that was flowing into the large growth companies. Well, there wasn't money flowing into the small and medium-sized value companies. If those if the economy were to sort of reactivate, those companies on the balance sheet look undervalued. Again, not a recommendation for a buy, but
or on sale.
Well,
what is undervalued? I mean, it's when you say things like that. Okay, so
undervalued means that they look like they're out of favor, right? So you know, you can buy investments that are working now, with the idea that they have momentum and they're going to keep growing, or you can buy things when they look like they're on sale, priced to recover, right? This is like, do you buy the house and flip it, or do you buy the house in the fast-growing neighborhood?
Ah, very good. Very good metaphor for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And some people just don't want to deal with the flipper.
Yeah, well, the flipper...
takes more work and effort.
Well, you can't put the work in as a passive shareholder. So you have to hope the management team's going to put the work in and make it a good flip.
Right.
You know, or that somebody else will come in and buy it for a bigger price.
Right. Okay.
That, by the way, you know, there's a funny name for that, by the way.
Which is?
Well, so the idea that you can buy a stock for any price you want, it doesn't matter what the value is, as long as you can sell it for more. And it's called the bigger fool theory. Right? As long as there's a bigger fool than you.
I don't even like that name.
But
that's
it's real.
Awful.
You know, you could.
As long as someone's willing to be the bigger fool and buy it for more, then it's
2006 real estate market, right?
True.
Hey,
you know
what? You could buy a house as long as a bigger fool will buy it for more from you later.
Accurate. Completely accurate.
And so that was the idea: is what's the bigger fool?
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. So as we look at other areas of the market, the first one is go look. I'm just suggesting that you look at undervalued segments of the market or out of favor segments of the market as a place to start some research. Okay, if you're looking for areas where the market appears to have not moved, you have to ask yourself why. So I'm not making recommendations, but I would suggest simply look, you know, sniff around in that area.
Channel your inner Sherlock Holmes and start investigating.
There you go. It's something that we are doing as an investment committee. We have not formally made a ton of movement yet, but
might be the next investment.
As an investor, you know, we like to have a certain amount of momentum in our strategy, and we like to have a certain amount of value, right? And those are the things that we think are underpriced, and the market is going to ultimately bring them back in favor. I think that if we have the economy reopen, it changes valuations, right? Real estate looks different when rent gets paid than when it doesn't.
True. Very true.
So speaking of rent and real estate, I want to talk about real estate a little bit. But we better take our next obscene corporate profit break. So we will do that and then come back and we'll unpack real estate and more fun stuff. Until then, this is David Littlejohn.
And Katie Shuck.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Katie, you know what? We have covered all kinds of fun today. And if you're just joining us, you guys, you should listen to the podcast, right? And the first segment has all the stuff we talked about in the first segment. And the second segment, also all the stuff from the second segment. So if you listen to both of them, you will have heard everything we've said up to now.
What were you for Halloween? Because it wasn't Captain Obvious. I really want you one year to dress up as Captain Obvious because it's just...
I would rock it.
You would. Like, I mean, you could be the next...
Captain Obvious, I think it could go for Major Obvious, too.
We could have a whole lineup of... Yeah, definitely needs to happen for sure.
Brilliant. So...
We were talking about real estate.
We were talking about real estate. This is the other question people are saying now post, again, assuming the election maintains where it's at, because I'm avoiding the controversy of somebody saying, oh, how could you go on the radio and this side of the other? It's like, whatever. We're just working with what we've got to work with here. So let's talk about real estate. So first and foremost, can real estate go up forever?
What?
No. It cannot. All right. Can real estate crash?
Yeah.
Yes. Will real estate crash? I don't see it that way.
What's considered a crash? Let's put some definitions to these terms here. Perfect. A little bit.
I'm going to let you define crash. What do you think a crash is, Katie?
Well, I've heard you say things like a crash is, is that like a correction where it's like more than 20% kind of thing?
So the stock market, a correction is more than 10% and a bear market is 20%. So if you go back 20% from your highs, a 20% move down would be...
Within so many days.
No, period.
Period.
It would become a bear market.
But what's considered a crash?
Anymore, I can't even tell you. What's hilarious is I get news feeds from various sources and... things like Dow craters. And then I see it's down 1.5%. I'm like, that's a crater? futures rocket higher and it's up 0.7.
If it bleeds, it leads.
Who writes these headlines? We need some guidance here.
That's what I'm saying.
Word guidance on what a riot means. No, give me guidance on a headline for the markets because I want to know what it means when markets plummet and they're down 1%. And I'm like, that is not a plummet.
That's not a plummet. That's a hiccup.
Markets go down today. Like, there you go. That's what you just told me.
But it doesn't catch eyeballs and it's not a catchy thing, right? So they're trying to figure out how to catch your ears and catch your eyes.
Well, and now I'm getting points. Points drive me nuts, okay? You guys want to know how to irritate me? Ha 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 ha.
Okay.
This is hilarious, right? Just say oh my gosh, the Dow's up 300 points. And I'm going to roll my eyes and go.
Out of context.
Yeah, 300 points 15 years ago was meaningful. 300 points today is like point nothing percent.
It's a rounding error.
It went up 1,400 points yesterday. Now we're getting somewhere. 1,400 points. At one point, it was up 4%.
So the higher the number goes, the more points it needs to be significant.
Well, that's the thing. When the Dow was 10,000, then 1,000 points was 10%.
Right.
When the Dow was 30,000 or close to, then 1,000 points is 0.33%. So give it to me in percentages if you want, because I want context. Yeah, points, please. That's just what that's relying on? Your anchoring bias. Yes, you person listening right now, I'm talking to you. If you've been watching markets for years and years and you're grounded in back in the days when minimum wage was $4 an hour or something and gas was 30 cents, then 300 points sounds really big. But look around and minimum wage is, approaching $10 now instead. It's like, okay, things change, including the value of the markets.
I'm going to speak to that for a minute because sometimes people call and they go, oh, did you see what the Dow did? And I'm like, are you invested in anything in the Dow? I don't know. Okay, so if you don't have any investments that are listed on the Dow index, then why do you care what the Dow did? Like, you're telling me that's your point of reference, but you don't own any of that.
Yeah, or, you know, everybody comparing their investments to the S&P 500 when they
don't own the whole S&P 500.
Or when you're invested in a diversified portfolio that's got stocks and bonds and all over the globe. And you're like, how come the S&P 500 looks like this and mine doesn't? It's because you have nothing resembling the S&P 500 as your investment. Why did you choose that as your benchmark? It's like comparing a truck to a car.
Yeah. Or to a three-wheeled car. It's just like, wait, they're not even close to the same. They don't even have the same
truck to a boat. I mean, like, wait a second here. You know, yeah, well, they're both vehicles, but we're...
By the way, we've talked about even, like, risk on here, right? Like, people come in, they go, well, I don't want to lose any money, and I don't want to take a lot of risk. And then they go, well, why didn't you do this thing? Because that's super aggressive risk, and you said you wanted to be moderately low risk, so you told me not to do that.
These are professional woes, by the way. We're secretly venting when we have a client that's like, well, I want to compare to the S&P. I said, yeah, but you can't. You know, you can't ride a bicycle, compare yourself to a Ferrari when that's the level of risk you're accepting, right? I mean, like, they're not the same investment. So you need to compare apples to apples.
And again, right, it's always easy to go, well, how come you're not doing that thing when it's going up? But when it's going down, everybody's like, ooh, I'm glad I didn't do that thing. So it's a double-edged sword. We can't win. But we were talking about crash. And we were trying to define crash. You asked me,
what's a real estate crash?
Like, to me, a crash would be like half the value. Like, if my house is now worth half of what it was a year ago,
that's a legit crash.
That's a crash.
So I would say, like, the 2006 to 2008 period of the market was a crash.
Right.
I lived in a home that lost 40% of its value.
Right. That, to me, would be a crash.
That was a crash. And where it's like, you know what? I have to pay money to leave. Right. I bought a house. It's worth less than I bought it for. And not just the commissions that I maybe paid real estate.
No, like, it's like the physical value is worth less.
Yeah. I can't come up with the money to leave my own house because I'm upside down in it. Yeah. You may have had a crash kind of environment.
I would consider a crash like half, or even, let's say, 35% or more, like, right, a third of it. Like, if it moves that much.
It's really hard to see that happen without having some really radical stuff go on in the marketplace.
Right.
And when I say radical stuff, it would mean things like all of this money that's been printed, because we've had massive stimulus.
Right.
It would have to find itself very quickly in the hands of the consumer. Because what you need is to generate massive amounts of inflation quickly. That means that the consumer either has to have tons more money than available product, because that's kind of what's driven up real estate prices now. Like, if you think about this.
Well, it's supply and demand, right? There's not a lot of supply and there's more demand.
But why is it that real estate is inflating in value, but other areas of the economy like energy are not?
That's a great question.
Why has oil gone down and housing has gone up? Because of access to money, right? If you can get super cheap money for a mortgage, then you can throw more money at a house to buy it as long as you can afford the payment.
Well, that's true. And aren't they offering mortgage interest rates right now at like 2.5% or something?
Low rates here. So
it's crazy low.
To give you an idea, I did some swag estimating here.
What's a swag?
Scientific wild arse guess.
So I love it.
And
fill in the A.
So assumptive guess. Yeah, assumptive. Scientific wild assumptive guess. And when we look at, if you look at median family incomes, it's around $59,000 in the state of Oregon.
Okay.
And you were to take 30% of your income and then take that over, divided by 12, it's about $1,400 a month.
Okay.
At 3.25% interest on a 30-year loan right now, if you didn't have to pay any of the other stuff, but 325, you borrow 325. You still have to pay taxes and your mortgage or your insurance.
PMI, yeah.
But your principal and interest is $1,400 a month, and that's 30% of your income.
Okay.
Or roughly, maybe it was 35, but whatever it is, it's around a third of your income, and so that's about what the median home price could be pushed to. It's not really that high. 325 at 3.25%, because we have other fees and things in there too that nibble away and force it down.
Principal, it really looks more like 275 to 300 than.
And so if we were to say, if you had to pay $200 in rent and taxes, then that number I can calculate on the fly. Not rent. I'm sorry. Taxes and insurance.
Okay. I was like, rent? I'm not renting the house I own.
then you're looking at more like, it looks to me about 275,000.
Right. That's kind of what I said, 275 to 300.
So 275. So that's why that kind of explains something about our local market too, right? Which houses as they approach $300,000 move slower. Houses below 200,000 move really, really fast.
Right, because you're taking the median income and going, well, these people are now qualifying for more house.
So you have to figure out a way to get people to have more money in their hand in order to pay more for an asset. If interest rates drop, that happens.
True.
Right? Interest rates drop, you can get more house. And that's what we've seen is rates have fallen from what they were 10 years ago in the sixes down to where they're at right now in the threes. So interest rates have been cut by 50%.
Which is a lot. It puts a lot more money in your pocket.
It puts a lot more money, but it doesn't necessarily go into your pocket. You have to buy the house. That's what the mortgage is for. So it means more money can chase the housing market, but not the gas tank market.
Very true. But people have also been asking, should I refinance?
Yeah. And so let's do this. Let's grab the last break.
Okay.
And then we can talk about the refinance question and just, so what does it mean for real estate? Are we headed for that mythical crash or what? We'll unpack that in our final segment. We've got to take the last obscene profit break. So stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
So that is surprising, actually.
I love when you lead in that way. That interview's like, what? What's surprising? Oh, yeah. David, tell me.
If you're just joining us, you missed
the,
it'll be
go
on the
check
podcast.
Out the podcast. You need to listen.
Com. It'll be there. We're talking about real estate in the last segment. And a lot of people were asking, is real estate due for a crash or something? And I was talking about what's driving the price up. And so we're looking at interest rates on the mortgage calculators.
Oh, yeah. No, I've seen people saying like, oh, you can get 2.15, 2.35. I'm like, what? Yeah,
so I'm looking at 30-year rates, but if I assumed 3.25 and we figured that you could get roughly $275,000 was the median income. And I'm ballparking these. You got to pay taxes and insurance.
Not
and
income, too. House. Median house.
Yeah, the median. Well, the median income could at a third of your money going into house payments, roughly, your median income would buy at that rate. $275,000.
Right.
For a 3.25 rate. But if that rate dropped to 2.75, it bumps from $275,000 to almost $300,000 for the same
payment.
See
a lot. Yeah.
And so that's my larger point.
And $25,000 can make a difference in a house.
Well, when rates go down, it's more money chasing the same home. By the way, that's inflation. That's literally the definition of an inflation. It's like more money chasing the same thing is inflation.
So do you feel like our clients have been asking, like, is the market going to crash? Or because I feel like more of the conversation has been, should I refi right now?
Well, so the refi question is a tricky one. Like, it's math, right? You because the interest rate is calculatable and you can say, okay, well, based on your payment, you can refi based on cash flow. Hey, if I do this, it means I have to pay less per month. But you have to pay for longer. You're reestablishing how long. But does it save you interest? And what's it cost you to do it? And you do the math.
Right.
So I can't answer the question like,
no, I'm just saying that's been a question that we've gotten a lot lately, though, is like, should I refi right now? Like, well, it's a good interest rate.
I've gotten that, or I've gotten questions, should I buy a house or should I wait for the markets to correct? I don't know that the market is going to correct because I don't think that the demand for housing goes away. I think the amount of money that can chase housing may change.
Right.
If we see economics, if we see stimulus that and the economy reopening, but we don't see wage increases, we see interest rates go up, then we see less purchasing power for homes.
Right.
And that could be deflationary for houses, meaning the real estate market could come back in value. But do I see like a 40% correction? No, I don't see the same circumstances as 2006 to 2008.
Right. Well, and the unknown to me is how many people have been laid off that are still laid off that are not making their mortgage payment. And what does that look like when that's lifted? and all of a sudden people are a year behind on their mortgages, right? Yeah. Are they getting the boot? Are they not getting? I'm not trying to be sensitive, but I mean, it's like, you know, is your house going into foreclosure? Is that going to flood the market? Is that going to lower the prices? Or, you know, how is that going to look? Is there going to be a stimulus package that says, hey, you know, we're going to help you get caught up? I mean, we don't know. We don't, because we're still kind of making the rules up as we go along with COVID.
Right.
So we just don't know. We don't know how this is all going to play out in the next 5 years.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go on the real estate question. And by the way, me approximating at a third of your income, I think that's too high. Just so
we're clear.
Isn't
it supposed to be like 20 or 25%?
28% by financial planning standards is typically the most that it should be. That doesn't include your other household expenses, but that's like what you should be paying all in
max,
for your house.
Max.
28%. Yeah. And, you know, people break it all the time. What I just will not tolerate is when your car payment is 28% of your take home. I'm like, that's ridiculous. you have to
True
live
story.
In your parents' basement when you're going to pull a stunt like that.
Oh, it's the guy that drives the BMW and goes to the apartment, right?
Right. Yeah, with roommates.
With roommates,
so,
yeah.
Anyway, I just want to emphasize that financial planning decisions need to be grounded in economic reality. But we're talking about the concept behind supply and demand and how you could see housing prices be inflated, but the rest of the economy not be inflated, which is where you get these fractured issues. And people are saying, why is CPI not going up? That's the consumer price index. But houses seem to be getting more expensive and food's getting more expensive. Well, food had to do with, you know, transportation and
it's
scarcity.
It's supply
and
chain,
COVID,
yeah.
Right. And housing had to do with the amount of money chasing the asset. But then gas prices went down, right? Well, nobody's buying it. There's no demand, so prices
fall. Yeah, people
fall.
Are staying home and not commuting to work as much.
There was
then.
A point when oil futures went negative.
I know,
do
that's so
that?
Crazy. Yeah.
Oil futures were
it
negative.
It cost more to own the barrel than it did. Well, I mean, just negative.
Well, yeah, because there was no place to store it. It's like, we're not using it. Back in, like, March when the markets were collapsing, we had negative oil futures
that's right.
for a little while.
That's so crazy.
And so that is something that we should all just kind of look back on and go like, oh, yeah, that did happen. Yes, it did. We got weird markets.
Still have weird markets. Still have weird circumstances for the day.
So do I see market crashes just all over the horizon? Not so far. Do I see lockdowns because of COVID? Unclear. There seems to not be as much political will. There seems to be a lot of will for being angry about it, but not a lot of will for, you know, it's like wear a mask and then go outside. That's kind of what seems to be the
census
pathway.
Right now. Yeah.
And you know, what you as a listener believe
choose
personally,
to do.
I'm triangulating on mass opinion here. I'm not even projecting my own opinion. I'm just saying, well, this seems to be what's going on. And that's part of my, we talk about this too, right? I'm not to be an optimist or a pessimist, nor am I to take one side or the other, but to examine them and then try to make good quality investment decisions based on that.
True.
So
look at the whole picture.
That is my take, is if I can do my best to set my emotions aside and then just look at the data, what it tells me is, no, I don't see a massive crash in real estate. I just see constraints on upside of pricing because I don't think people are getting paid more. So I think we've about got as much money chasing the asset class as we can. And I don't see the markets collapsing because I don't see a lot of other places for the money to go. Doesn't mean it won't happen. Just means that's what it looks like to me. Right?
And guess what? It's the True Wealth Show, which you are the host of. So you get the chance to have your opinion on it.
I'm an expert in my opinion. It's awesome. Anyway,
you should be an expert of your opinion.
There you go. Well, there's the music. And so you know what that means. It's time to go. Katie, how do they reach us if they want more info?
541-375-0898. Also, info@littlejohnfs.com.
Yep, and all the social environments and stuff. And we even have a chat bot now on our webpage,
woo
so you
woo,
can hit us up there.
Chat bot.
So reach out to us until next week when we reach out to you. Thanks for joining us. This has been Dave Littlejohn.
And Katie Shook.
You've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240.
KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Littlejohn Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brooks Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.